Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Vet Blast podcast brought to you by DVM 360. I am Dr. Adam Christman, your host, and my guest this week is Josh Weissman. He is a certified compassion fatigue professional. Josh believes all veterinary professionals deserve to feel fulfilled by their work each and every day. Through his company, Flourish Veterinary Consulting, he combines more than 20 years of veterinary experience, a master's in applied positive psychology and coaching psychology, an education in positive leadership and positive organizational scholarship to help them do just that. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I have to tell you, I don't think I could hear enough. The Vet Blast podcast, like the way that you say it too.
Right?
Like it
so much and you got to use your chest voice. Welcome to the Vet Blast podcast.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love it. Seriously, that's the best.
Oh, thank you so much. I mean, listen, we're talking about everything in your bio is talking about positive energy, being optimistic. I mean, we love to be around that kind of energy, especially now with the pandemic.
Yeah.
You know, thank you for being in our professional. So tell us a little bit about why that's so important in veterinary medicine.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, I can spout off kind of all the statistics that we're all probably sick and tired of hearing at this point in time, but clearly we have kind of this ongoing epidemic, if you will, within our field of, you know, the work that we do, while the work itself is incredibly meaningful and very purpose-driven work, it doesn't always feel that way on a day-to-day basis. And so I think what we're seeing is a lot of veterinary professionals, really at all levels, veterinarians, practice managers, hospital owners, technicians, credentialed or not, CSRs, kennel techs, everybody is really struggling to find sustainable fulfillment in this field. And so we see, you know, exponentially high rates of turnover. We see way more psychological distress than I think we should ever see in a field like this. You know, we see higher rates of depression. We obviously see increased rates of suicide. And we're now finding out that it's not just veterinarians. It's actually support staff that are experiencing that as well. Yeah. Kidders is going to join the party.
Right. I knew this was going to happen. Animals, you got to join the party.
Yeah. Kidders is going to introduce herself to all of your adoring fans because that's what she does.
I love it.
Yeah. So,
by the way, if you can't watch, it's a kitty that he's got. She's beautiful.
Yes, yeah. She is pretty beautiful.
She's like, look at my tail, look at my butt.
Oh yeah. Pretty soon you're going to get to look at her butt.
Yes, we see it on camera.
I experienced a little bit of this myself, and I've seen it in the field, you know, in all the thousands and thousands of vet professionals that I've gotten to meet. And it just doesn't seem right to me. And I think that there's been a lot of effort to help kind of alleviate these problems. You know, we're medical practitioners, we're healthcare practitioners, so we want to alleviate suffering. What I find really interesting about, in particular, the positive psychology approach is that positive psychology posits that, you know, the absence of distress, the absence of illness, the absence of struggle does not necessarily equate to wellness or thriving or flourishing. You know, you could be not burnt out, but also not thriving in your work. And so I think that we really need the positive psychology approach in our field so that not only can we kind of eliminate the problems that are contributing to all of these challenges that we see in the statistics, but that we can actually create a field that contributes to sustainable thriving and fulfillment for all the people that are called to this work.
Do you think that people feel in this profession, they feel embarrassed or ashamed to announce the fact that they feel what you're describing, like I feel burnt out, like I don't want to show my pride or I don't want to show my weakness because we're trained as medical professionals to be strong for everybody else? Do you find that happening?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, there's sort of an implicit stigma around struggle in our field. I didn't go to vet school. I'm not a DVM, but, you know, I know enough DVMs and I've dealt with enough educators to know that there's, you know, there's this kind of hidden curriculum throughout the educational program as well that that I think permeates into the field. And I've experienced it myself. I can tell you, Adam, I went through a pretty significant bout of burnout myself just a few years ago. And, you know, from the outside looking in, I was at the pinnacle, man. I was at the peak of success. I was an owner in, you know, a pretty vibrant and growing practice. I was the on-site hospital director there. I was involved with a startup consulting group. She's right back.
Okay. Typical
cat. Yeah. Right. I had gotten in at the ground level with a startup consolidating group. Like, I was making more money than I'd ever made before in my life. I had unbelievable opportunities in front of me. And anybody who would have looked at that would have said, wow, Josh has really hit the success jackpot. And yet I was miserable. I was unfulfilled. I was, you know, running on empty. The joke that I tell is you do the math, there's 168 hours in a week. I felt like I was working 200 of them. It was ridiculous. It was not sustainable. And I literally had a breakdown. One morning, cooking eggs for my wife and I for breakfast, scrambling eggs, and I set the ladle down and just like burst out into uncontrollable tears. And I had absolutely no idea why I was crying. I mean, I just couldn't stop. And my wife was like, oh my gosh, are you okay? Did you hurt yourself? And all I could think to say to her was, I don't know what's happening. I just can't take it anymore. And yet, this was in March, I didn't actually step away from all the things that were contributing to that burnout for another 6 months. It took me 6 months to give myself permission to talk to my partners about it, to talk to my friends about it, to seek some advice and some help from a coach, those kinds of things. Because I believed, like, listen, man, you're doing it. You're the entrepreneur. You're making your money. Put on your big boy pants.
Right.
Grin and bear it and just keep going. That's what you're supposed to do. So I felt it. So I'm sure that others feel it too. Yes, I do think that stigma exists.
I agree. I've experienced it myself, and I've seen it with colleagues and friends where no one wants to voice anything about it. Fortunately, the pendulum has shifted where we're talking a lot about it. They're talking about it in veterinary school. They're making sure that, you know, self-aware and self-care does not mean that you're selfish. So yeah. I think it's really important that we do talk about it and having individuals like yourself check in on us to make sure that we're okay. Because,
yeah,
you know, you do 12, 14 hour shifts or whatever, and you come home, you feel like you have nothing left to give. You know, you really do. You feel like, I just want to eat a bowl of Cheerios and watch Bravo and be done.
Right. Yes. Yes.
And I'm like, I feel like I'm catatonic. Like, and then I rinse and repeat and do this again tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know? So, but no, it's great that you're doing that. And your bios talks a lot about, you know, positive psychology, positive leadership. You mentioned about there's the four P's of positive leadership. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. You know, Adam, I'd love to start with a story that I think kind of relates to a little bit of what you were just saying and segues into a discussion around positive leadership and the importance of it. I did some work for a human hospital system a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, something like that. And in preparation for that, I was going to be talking to them about compassion fatigue, which is not my most favorite topic to talk about. But, you know, I have the CCFP, so I do it. And in preparation for it, I spoke to some of the doctors there. And one doctor in particular involved in this practice, it's 80-something doctors, you know, in a leadership position. And I chatted with him about this stuff. And he actually warned me. He said, you know, if all you do is focus on burnout and trying to make awareness of burnout, like, I just want you to know these doctors are going to be really sensitive to that. And I was shocked by that. You know, in the veterinary field, like, we're just starting to really openly talk about this. But in human medicine, they've been talking about it for a while. And what's happened is that as they've destigmatized the talk around burnout, the sort of the locus of it has shifted in an unhealthy way. What do I mean by that? In human medicine, when we talk to the doctors about burnout, the physicians, more often than not, their response is to feel like they're being blamed for being insufficient. It's almost as if the administrators, the leaders, the people who have the power over the environment that's contributing to that burnout are implicitly stating to these doctors, you're burnt out because you can't hack it. And if you can't hack it, figure out a way to hack it or get out of the kitchen.
Right? That's exactly right.
Yeah. And that's absolutely 100% incorrect. More often than not, people problems are system problems. the system contributes to or enables the experiences that we have at work. And we know that burnout is absolutely an occupational phenomenon. We don't get burned out outside of work. We get burned out in work. It's not because something's broken in us. It might in part be because we're not very good at establishing boundaries or practicing self-care, things like that. But if the environment is broken, it doesn't really matter what we do. So he told me a story to exemplify this, and this was the story. In their hospital, the administrators recognized that there was a burnout problem, brought it up to the team and said, okay, here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna provide on-site yoga classes. We're gonna provide on-site mindfulness training. We're gonna give you these opportunities to practice self-care here in the hospital. And then did absolutely nothing to change the physician's schedules. So these offerings were available and none of them could attend.
You don't have the time.
This is why positive leadership is such an important thing. Positive leadership says, listen, there is an environmental issue here. There's an environmental opportunity for us to create these systems that actually uplift the people, that actually give people the sense of meaningfulness and fulfillment, appreciation and value, that show people that they're included, that they matter, that they're part of a higher purpose in an active, routine, and intentional way. So the four P's of positive leadership is a framework that I've developed around this, where I'm essentially pulling from the science of human thriving, which I kind of use as a grand umbrella. So positive psychology is one of them, positive organizational scholarship. There's actually some pretty vibrant research behind this idea of positive leadership. I'm pulling from a lot of these different areas and I'm trying to say, okay, what does the science tell us contributes to people really thriving at work? How can we simplify that into a framework that every leader can then consider in their actions and their behaviors and their policies and procedures, how they approach their work? And so I've condensed it down to this very simple four P's. It's psychological safety, purpose, path, and progress. Psychological safety, purpose, path, and progress. So what do those things essentially mean? Well, psychological safety, I think, is the foundation of all of it. We know very conclusively through the research of folks like Dr. Amy Edmondson out of Harvard and some of the work that Google's done with their Project Aristotle, Dr. Campbell, there's a variety of researchers. We know that the number one predictor of an effective team, and by effective, I mean a team that's able to come together, collectively collaborate, uplift each other, openly discuss difficult and challenging things like I am struggling or Adam, you know, I really believe in you, but the way that you're approaching this, I don't think it's working. Can we talk about that? These are all what we would call interpersonal risks, really difficult things to do in a human environment. You have to have the presence of what we call psychological safety to enable those things so that the team can be as effective, innovative, creative as possible. So that's the psychological safety. So what do we do? How do we act? How do we talk in a way that either enhances or diminishes the presence of psychological safety? Have to start there. From there, we move to purpose. And purpose is really about sort of what is the higher purpose? Now, higher purpose can feel like a really big, bold thing. It doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be this world-saving thing. It can be as simple as we exist to improve the lives of the patients that we serve. And everything we do goes through that filter. Every decision we make, every action we take, every behavior, every new policy or procedure, we're always asking, is this helping us serve our higher purpose? And then when we see that happening in the workplace, we identify it, we point it out, we celebrate it, because that's how we help people enable this experience of meaningfulness. And I'll tell you, there's some really fascinating research around this experience of meaningfulness. When we feel a sense of meaningfulness at work, it has a direct negative correlation to the experience of burnout. When work feels meaningless to us, the actual activity that we're engaged in at any point in time, that contributes to burnout. When it feels meaningful, it mitigates burnout. And it really only has to feel meaningful about 20% of the time to get the maximum benefit of minimum burnout risk. We can enable that. There are actual skills and tools that leaders can apply to the workplace to help enable that experience. So that's the purpose. Then we move to path. Well, we know very, very clearly that one of the key drivers of human motivation, in particular sustainable motivation, what we call intrinsic motivation, is role clarity. Like really, truly understanding, what are we doing? Why are we doing it? What's expected of me? what's expected of the people around me. Genuinely having that pin in the map and knowing that's where I'm going. That's where we're going together. And then leaders getting out of the way and allowing some flexibility and autonomy for people to choose how they work, or at least have a meaningful experience of having some flexibility around how they work. So that's kind of laying the path, right? Mm-hmm. And then finally, we end on progress. Listen, we've established the safety, we've made an environment that's inclusive, that allows people to share ideas, to share difficulty and challenge, to uplift each other, to challenge each other. We're clear on what our purpose is, why we're here. We're enabling the experience of meaningfulness. We've set the compass, like we've set the pin in the map. Now we have to signpost progress along the way. People like to feel, all of us, we like to feel like we're developing, like we're growing, like we're achieving, right? Yeah. And so we have to find formalized and routine ways to do that. Now, part of that is genuine appreciation and real appreciation. I'll tell you, when I was a hospital director, I took pride in, at the end of every day, I'd walk around the hospital and I'd find everybody that was working and I'd say, hey, Adam, thanks for your work today, man. And at first, I think that probably had an impact. But when I did that every day for years and years and years, it lost its, like, okay, you don't even know what I did.
Diluted.
Yeah, yeah. Like you weren't back here. You don't know what I did. Like, what are you thanking me for? Yeah, appreciation has to be very specific. It has to be around behavior. And it has to show impact. How did what you did, not just I'm thankful or I'm appreciating you, but why? Yeah. Why do I appreciate that, right? And when we can learn to do that, that's a really powerful signpost for the progress. But progress is also about providing meaningful feedback when things are off course. You know, we know what the pin is and we want to get there. We need some guide rails sometimes. Sometimes we drift off course and we may not even be aware of it. So we have to establish an environment in which is, listen, man, I have high standards for you. I believe in you. That's why I have high standards for you. So I'm going to give you some feedback now that might feel challenging, but I wouldn't give it to you if I didn't think you could meet it. You know, being able to do that. When we can establish these practices and embed them into our environment on a routine basis, man, we get the best out of people. And when we get the best out of people, we get the best out of organizations.
Gosh, well said.
Thanks.
Well said. Bravo. I couldn't have said it any better. Nothing feels better than feeling empowered as an employee, whether it be a veterinary assistant, technician, or doctor. And we're in a profession full of such high emotions and low emotions. And so the fact that you're talking about like psychological safety, I think that that's really important. It reminds me, like I always tell my employees, like myself too, I always like to do a SWOT analysis on myself, right? My personality SWOT. Like, what are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? Where are my opportunities to grow and develop myself as an employee? And what are some threats that I need to be concerned with? And I really do internalize that.
Do you watch The Office?
Yes.
I'm thinking of Michael when he was like, when he was interviewing for the corporate job and he's, you know, he's asked, so how would you describe your weaknesses? Well, my biggest weakness is I care too much, right. Work too hard.
Right, yes.
Okay, well, what are your strengths? Well, I really care a lot and I really work on So your strengths are your weaknesses.
That's so funny. It's so true though. I love it. Because being a leader, and you don't have to be a practice owner, you could be a team lead, you could be a receptionist lead, but you need to have those four P's in play. I really do feel like it, especially in the veterinary setting, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. These are skills that, you know, we call it positive leadership, and we tend to associate leadership with people who have that, you know, official formal hat on. I'm the hospital owner. I'm the medical director. Yeah. I'm the practice manager. And absolutely, it is critical that those folks embrace these kinds of practices and really intentionally embed it into the culture. Totally agree. We know that about 70% of the variance in people's things like job satisfaction, intention to stay in work, so on and so forth, is directly correlated to the leadership that they're exposed to at work. That said, we all have opportunities to practice leadership, regardless of what role we're in. Psychological safety in particular, that's a team phenomenon. So everybody on the team plays a role in either building it or depleting it. And so we all can learn about it, learn about the practices, and help to build up those practices within our team. We all can call out, like, you know, there would be nothing wrong with a technician. In fact, you would probably appreciate it. You go to work one of your ER shifts, and one of the techs sees you doing something great that's serving the higher purpose or had a positive impact on them, or they saw you have an interaction with a client that really, you know, made the client smile. And if they pointed that out to you, that's valuable. Right. That's really important. You know, it doesn't have to necessarily come from your boss. It can come from anybody.
Because so many people would feel, I don't feel appreciated when they're in the workspace.
Yeah.
And so, you know, just saying, just like you were talking about the end of the day, just saying thank you every now and then, doesn't have to be every day like you're saying, but just to call them out or in a team meeting or a weekly huddle or whatever, just to say, wow, I just want to say, you did a really good job putting that catheter in. Like, I don't think you were going to be able to do any of that because the cat was so dehydrated and you did it. Like, high five.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Because that, you know, I feel that increases morale and makes them feel better.
Yes.
You're more efficient. You're more productive. You make money that way too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that we can, one of the skills that, you know, that I've really learned about in the education that I've gotten over the past several years is that you can actually enhance that kind of appreciation in a really special way that really lands pretty powerfully on people. Hey, you know, man, that cat was so darn dehydrated. I didn't think anyone was going to be able to get a catheter in it. And you did it. High five. That's awesome. You know, in doing that, you decrease the amount of stress and distress, not just for that cat, but for the whole team. You enabled us to get access to, you know, to its circulatory system faster, which meant that we were able to give it that, you know, drug a little bit quicker, get it sedated. You know, it just helped the flow with everything. So thank you for that. And so it's that impact on the end. You know, I see you, I value you, I appreciate you. And this is the impact that it's had. This is the way that it's contributed to the team around you. That impact really drives that sense of meaningfulness for people. And if we can learn to do that on a regular basis, holy cow. The clouds part, the sun shines, the
Josh Weisman, thank you so much for being on. I have to ask you one fun question. I always ask all my guests different questions. If you could speak to anyone, dead or alive, Josh, who would it be and why? This is like a college resume question.
So you mean anybody other than you?
Oh, of course. Well, obviously, duh.
I have, so my bachelor's degree was actually in philosophy. And the very first philosophy course that I took, the professor talked about this philosopher, David Hume. He was an empiricist. And the way that he described David Hume was like, you know, there's atheists and there's agnostics. And so like atheists would say, you know, there's no Snickers bar and it's the worst thing in the world. And an agnostic like David Hume would say, there's no Snickers bar, but who cares? There's Reese's peanut butter cups. And ever since he shared that with me, I've always thought, I want to meet David Hume.
Yeah.
Like, I want to talk to the guy that's like, no Snickers, who cares? There's peanut butter cups.
I love that. Awesome. Where can we find more information about you?
Sure. Yeah. So my website for my consulting firm is flourishveterinaryconsulting.com. It's a mouthful, F-L-O-U-R-I-S-H, veterinaryconsulting.com. Flourish is active on Facebook, and then I am personally active on LinkedIn as well, so just Josh Weisman on LinkedIn.
Well, our goal is to flourish away and flourish veterinary hospitals and professionals and make them the best people that they can be. So thank you for all you do. That's amazing.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Josh Weisman, everybody. Give him a round of applause. Thank you so much for tuning in, you guys, to the Vet Blast Podcast. We will see you next week. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast Podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.